Welcome to Western Veterinary Perspectives, the podcast of the Western Canadian Animal Health Network. Today we'll hear some cautionary tales from Dr. Karen Orsell, a professor in epidemiology and infectious diseases from the University of Calgary. Dr. Orsell has some up-close and personal experience with the impacts of bovine infectious disease outbreaks for some diseases of cattle that currently don't exist in Canada. These foreign animal diseases, such as foot and mouth disease, are kept out of Canada only by the strength of our farm biosecurity and through the ongoing monitoring and reporting of any signs of concern to the veterinary regulators for further investigation. Her experiences highlight the importance of vigilance and traceability in the cattle sector to ensure the health of our cattle and the security of our food systems. Thanks for joining us, Dr. Orsell.
Thank you so much for the invitation.
So luckily, there are some long lists of bovine diseases that we currently don't have in Canada. Which of these do you think are the most important for Canadian cattle producers and veterinarians to be mindful of, and why?
I think it's important to think about diseases in three big groups. There is one group that we are all very familiar with, and that's the group of production-limiting diseases. That is our bovine respiratory disease, our pneumonias, things that we deal with on a day-to-day basis. They're important for production. But there's two different groups of diseases that are very important to keep on our radar, and they're either reportable diseases or they're notifiable diseases. And those are diseases that we currently don't have in Canada, but we want to know if they pop up.
Who actually determines then which diseases are considered to be foreign animal diseases for Canada, and how did they develop this list?
The list is based on the World Organization of Animal Health, now the WOA, has a list of all these diseases. And then it's up to the countries to see whether we have a status of free from that disease or not. And the most interesting disease, and I think a disease that most people understand best, would be foot and mouth disease. It's listed by the WOA, but some countries have the disease and they accept that status, where Canada has a freed status from that disease. So for us in Canada, the disease is reportable and that report needs to go to the CFIA. So the CFIA is our Canadian organization that connects with the WOA internationally.
I know you've had a variety of experiences working with animals abroad, and that some of this work did involve managing some diseases that are considered foreign animal diseases in Canada. Could you tell us about the first time you were involved in one of these outbreaks as a newly fledged veterinarian? How did that go?
Yeah, I'm graduated and probably my accent gives it away from the Netherlands. So I practiced in the Netherlands in 1997. When classical swine fever was hitting Europe. So classical swine fever in the swine population is not African swine fever. It's maybe a little milder version, but it still limits exportation. So it closes the market access and it closes borders. I was a bovine veterinarian, so I thought it wouldn't affect me, but it does. Because even if it's affecting other species, it might, you know, limit your access to a farm that has both species. It has a massive impact on market access and export and slaughter capacity. So it was quite disturbing, you know, being a young veterinarian and having to deal with this, especially when some of your colleagues or friends deal with, you know, massive culling or, you know, preemptive culling of barns of otherwise healthy animals for disease control measures. So that was quite intense to experience. And unfortunately, after that 1997-98 experience, I got another one to deal with in 2001, and that was actually foot and mouth disease, which, as most people might know, affects every cloven-hoofed animal. So that was affecting the swine population as well as the bovine population. So now I was all in dealing with an outbreak in the species that I dealt with, which is the cattle industry. So that was a quite devastating experience.
So speaking of foot and mouth disease, I know you were actually working with cattle who were infected with that condition. What did you notice and how was that experience for yourself and the producers you worked with?
I think what I underestimated being a veterinarian is that if you think about the disease, you think about sick animals. And as of today, you know, if any animal is affected by foot and mouth disease, I understand what needs to be done, and I want to put those animals out of their suffering. That was sort of the easy part. What is very complicated is the whole control strategy around it. Because if you have a standstill of animals that are not allowed to move, if animals cannot be marketed, if people have overflown barns or other facilities, now you're dealing with welfare issues. You're dealing with people that lose their animals for control measures. So otherwise healthy animals that are being culled to just regain your free status. And what I learned the hard way was that disease control has a political component to it as well. There is part for politics, but there is also the challenge of all the industries that have to work together. Because like I said, with the swine example, and especially in foot and mouth, it's the beef industry, the dairy industry, the swine industry. Everyone has to agree on the best approach with the politicians to regain that free status for the country and to allow, you know, animals to move again. And that was quite devastating. It affected also my social life. All of a sudden you realize that things you like to do on the weekend or, you know, whatever you do, your friends, everyone is connected to the agricultural industry and everyone is in a depression, is down, is affected either financially or mentally. And, you know, the mental consequences of dealing with such an invasive disease are really, really intense. So it definitely changed my life, you know, working through an outbreak of foot and mouth disease.
Maybe you could tell us a little bit about what clinical signs and symptoms were noted on farms kind of at the beginning of the foot and mouth disease outbreak and how the disease progressed during the outbreak as to what the producer might have been seeing or experiencing.
It can be strain dependent, and also that results in species differences. The signs in cows were obvious. You know, the cows are just salivating. You know, they can't stand up. They're moving their weight from left to right to left to right. There is buckets of, you know, saliva in front of them because of all the lesions in their mouth. I think our main challenges were with the small ruminants that only like sheep and goats that showed very minimal clinical signs, and even more challenging, the swine industry. We know that the swine, the pig population is very susceptible, but the Dutch swine industry has learned from the classical swine fever outbreak, and their biosecurity was bang on. They were able to keep the virus out. So we hardly saw signs in sheep and goat, but if it made it into the cows, it was very severe and very, very nasty to look at. You know, ultimately, animals can even slough off their hooves because of the ulceration at their coronary bands, at their hooves. So it's extremely painful and sometimes more obvious in one species than the other. But cattle, most of the time, are quite severely affected.
That explains, too, some of the welfare implications associated with these disease outbreaks, since the symptoms are so painful for the animals. And I imagine that they'll be off feed as well, not able to eat with those lesions.
Yes, correct. So I think when animals are clinically affected, there isn't a lot of debate about what is the best cause. And I think, although I talked to really some elderly people in the outbreak that said, you know, in the 60s, we would just have animals recover. That is a welfare problem. That is something that we cannot have in 2023. I think the challenge comes when, you know, there is overcrowding, especially for species like swine. In the beef industry, it might not affect us so much. We might just end up with, you know, if it happens in winter, we don't have enough feed because animals cannot move. And who pays for feeding if animals cannot move? And so what do people decide if they have animals and no food? That welfare discussion about stocking density, overcrowding, feed excess. So the welfare cullings are really a tough ethical problem to deal with.
Once that outbreak was over and done with, what were your biggest takeaways then? I'm really curious if you feel that how the producer groups and the political side of things worked together, if it was successful in that incident, or what your take home was there.
Well, in a way, it scarred me, but it also, there's lots of lessons learned. And I'm glad that in Canada, there's a lot of discussion in peacetime. At the moment, we don't have the disease. So we're having discussions about being aware and being prepared. But I think the willingness of all the industries to work together and sometimes make decisions that might harm one industry, but just to, you know, recover the other one is a really hard one. And on top of that, it's the discussion about traceability. Just to give you an idea is that when the disease was identified in the UK, within 24 hours, the Dutch government decided on a standstill for all small ruminants. I think that will be a really tough call to expect to happen in Canada, where we have our federal responsibilities and our provincial responsibilities and everyone buying in into the need of, you know, such invasive decision making. The good thing is, though, is that in the end, the disease was introduced, but after 3 months, all the cases were dealt with and we could work towards, you know, getting back our status for freedom. Where in the UK, the disease had spread way more widely. And with that, it took them way longer to get that free status again. And I'm a little bit worried for Canada is that if we are not willing to work together and really aggressively, you know, intervene in the beginning of an outbreak, it might just spread like a wildfire. And that is something I'm really worried about. That was my lesson learned, is that you need to act fast and you cannot wait for all the facts and all the details to be known, because then you're too late.
Here in Canada, the Canadian Food Inspection Agency, the provincial regulatory veterinarians and producer groups also work together to monitor and manage disease incidents. Could you explain how these groups interact in the case that a producer or a veterinarian thinks they may be dealing with a case of a foreign animal disease in cattle?
Sure. Like if we stick with our federally reportable diseases, like the foot and mouth we talked about, but also BSE and others, everyone that suspects this disease has to connect with the CFIA, and the CFIA will take over from there. Because the disease has such a massive impact, especially on market access and trade. The other diseases that are also important and that are listed as notifiable diseases, only the labs will report to the CFIA. Those diseases are exotic to Canada, so we want to know if they all of a sudden pop up, but there isn't a massive intervention needed. And there are some annually notifiable diseases. So that is where labs will just submit an overview so that we know what is going on. And diseases like BVD and mucosal disease, so PIs or blackleg, are on that list. So there is a close collaboration with the producer groups on provincial and federal level, and at national level, the CFIA.
So we've spoken a bit both about foot and mouth disease, and you just mentioned bovine spongiform encephalopathy, or mad cow disease, as it's termed. These are two diseases of cattle I'm sure everyone has heard of at some point. I know there are all these classifications of diseases at the CFIA. Could you explain a little bit about how the classification affects how they're regulated or reported or monitored at CFIA?
Sure, because the reportable diseases, so the federally reportable diseases like BSE and foot and mouth, they have a massive impact on our market access. Their impact is bigger and beyond the individual producer. So I think that is what people can keep in mind, is that it doesn't just affect you or your neighbor or your county. It affects the country, because we might not be allowed to export certain products to countries that we normally do. And I think people remember that from our BSE past in Canada, is that there were markets that were not accessible to us. And I think that is essentially the difference between reportable diseases and notifiable diseases. Notifiable diseases can have a massive impact for the individual producer, but don't necessarily affect the whole industry. So that would be, I think, the main difference, how they're classified and that we're responding differently to those two.
In the case that we were to have an incident or an outbreak of a foreign animal disease in Canada, what would be the most likely way that that disease would arrive here in the first place?
I always like to tell stories, and one of the stories that can answer this question is some of the work that some of my colleagues and myself have done working with students in Tanzania. And we would work with the local cattle producers, and foot and mouth disease is endemic in Tanzania. So now I am in Tanzania, and I think a lot of people have been there. They think about safaris and enjoying being there or meeting Maasai and their cattle. But what you have to realize is at that point in time, especially like in my case, when you're a veterinarian and you work closely with cattle, you are closely working with that virus. So if you go back to Canada, what is on your shoes? What is on your clothing? What can you bring back? So that's why at the border, we have those questions like, did you visit a farm? Are you planning to go and visit a farm? And I would always quarantine myself. When I would come home, I would put all my personal belongings in the laundry and make sure that I would not access a farm after a few days of carefully, you know, waiting before I would see another cow again. So people can be the how it's introduced. And the other thing is animal products. People might travel and, you know, are really, you know, enjoying a meat product. You cannot bring sausages back. And there is a reason for it, because that meat product might actually contain the virus. So animals, animal products, and people are on the list. And I think animals are always the most important. I started my story with people. I added the meat products to it, but the most important is animals. And especially if animals travel through several auctions and it's hard to know the country of origin or where the animal ultimately is from. So animals are the most likely reason that diseases are introduced. So that's why personally, I think tracking and tracing is essential. We need to know where the animal is from, where the animal interacted with what other groups of animals, and what's the risk that animal brought a disease into our country, into a feed yard, into a herd from outside of our country or outside of our province.
So knowing some of those risky potential routes of disease introduction, what steps can we take to help minimize the chance that we're going to bring something home with us when we're traveling, or that we'll be the one who introduces a terrible disease?
Yeah, my first focus would always be on the animals. And the more we move animals around, the more risk we're taking. So having a closed herd, don't buy animals of origin that you're not sure where they're from. You know, not fighting the tracking and tracing system, but understand what's the need for knowing where animals are from and where they're going is the number one for me, for the industry to be a little bit more welcoming to that concept, I would say. And I think there is a reason why questions are asked at the border. There is a reason why we have the doggies go around and check your luggage. You cannot bring those products back. You should not be in close contact with animals if abroad you were in contact with the same animals. Those are things that people can consider. I know some beef producers might just think about attending BIF. Well, this year it's in Canada, but other years it's in the US. If you're going to a conference or a producer meeting and there is farm visits, that's perfect. But make sure you're not wearing stuff that you were wearing on your farm, or make sure it's thoroughly cleaned. And when you come back, do the same thing. Thoroughly clean it and make sure that you're not the reason that you introduce a disease.
You mentioned traceability in that point, and I know that traceability of food animals is always a hot topic. Can you explain what this is and why you feel it's especially important in the case of a foreign animal disease incident?
I think if I'm allowed to just go back to the foot and mouth example, and I can just give some dates. So in February 21st, it was identified in the UK. Like I said, the day after the 22nd, there was an import ban in the Netherlands and a standstill for sheep. The 24th, all animals that had originally come from the UK were identified and tested. So that is within 3 days, all animals that were originally from the UK were identified in the Netherlands at what location they were, and we knew of every animal where it was. to me, that's still a dream to happen in Canada. I think some people, you know, they use community pastures and they don't know who went to the community pasture. They buy animals and we don't know where they're originally from because we cannot have access to that information. I think knowing where animals are from, how they traveled, where the contact had been, because ultimately the virus was introduced in the Netherlands through an auction place in France. And only knowing that and having that open traceability system in place, were we able to find the calves that brought the disease to the country. And I think that is what I'm thinking about. If something happens in Canada, we need to know who was in contact with whom. And that is traceability for us. That is an ear tag with producers reporting, you know, which tags are on farm, who's leaving, who's entering, so that any point in time, we know where animals are.
Maybe you could speak a little bit about, in this example that you've given, once those initial animals were identified, was there any kind of penalty associated with that? I guess one fear might be that a producer or a person might be blacklisted, so to say, for being the one who introduced the disease, right? So I feel like there could be some fear associated with the traceability, that there might be a negative impact of that.
I would like to replace that word maybe with trust. Because these calves were all legally imported, so there was nothing wrong. And like I identified at the beginning, the clinical signs can differ quite significantly between the different species, but also age groups. So those calves clinically were healthy. So they were field calves, they were bought legally and brought into the country. I think it becomes challenging when people might just bend the rules a little bit. And that might have consequences. For example, with foot and mouth disease, we tend to think about control zones around the outbreak. So let's say you bended the rules, but now everyone within a 3-kilometer zone cannot move animals and might have to cull their animals. Well, if that is because that person didn't follow the rules, or we all know that, you know, they don't take health of their animals so serious as you do, it becomes a huge trust issue. And I think also because there is a lot of stress. Like if you're not allowed to move animals, if the markets might close, if the borders are closing, everyone is uncertain about their future as a producer. How does that affect me? How do I financially survive? So that stress, that enormous pressure on it, just really makes it a trust issue. And I think it's hard to imagine for people that didn't live through it, how intense that is. And it shouldn't be underestimated. The mental health impacts of dealing with an outbreak are extremely significant.
For sure. I know no one wants to see their animals sick or their animals, you know, dealing with a disease. And there's all that potential and worry and stress that goes along with these types of outbreaks. With the benefit of your lived experiences with these previous cattle disease outbreaks, what do you recommend that Canadian cattle producers and veterinarians could do right now to protect our herds and to maintain our disease-free status?
I think my recommendation to the industry would be is, you know, learn from others. You don't have to wait till it happens in Canada to see how we deal with it. Other countries, unfortunately, have experience and you can learn from that. And I know there is awareness campaigns. There are discussions. As I said, it's currently peacetime. So let's discuss together and let's recognize that we have to deal with those things together. And if we're waiting until all the financial consequences have been ironed out and all the details have been ironed out before we're willing to commit, you know, it might be too late. We really need to be in this together. But before that, it always comes down to biosecurity. And I think biosecurity is not on everyone's, you know, highest priority. We're bringing in animals. We are mixing animals from different groups, not necessarily always knowing the health status of other animals. So I think just thinking about, for producers, maybe work with your veterinarian and ask what you can do to increase, you know, the risk of an introduction of a disease. And if you're buying bulls, what is the source of your bulls? Can you ask about their health status? Because it's very unlikely they're affected by foot and mouth disease, but they might be affected by, you know, one of those notifiable diseases, or you introduce Joni's disease by buying an animal from an unknown source, or you don't know the health status of that herd. So when you bring in animals, the more questions you can ask about the health, the better. Quarantine is quite essential in a component in biosecurity. And think about who visits your herd. Can that person bring in some diseases, and how do you deal with that? That is a really important thing, I think, in peacetime, to be ready that if something happens, we all know what to do.
So one additional question I'd have would be, do you feel that in peacetime, pre-planning for a disease incident can be effective?
I think I'm so scarred by living through the experience that I think a lot of people underestimate what it really means. And so I do feel that those simulation exercises, the discussions about all the consequences are extremely important in peacetime, but people might just underestimate how important they are, and especially recognizing, and maybe I can just, you know, bring in COVID here, is that we've seen our government making decisions based on the, at that point in time, best knowledge we had. And that might be the same if foot and mouth disease is introduced in Canada. It takes time before we know what strain. It takes time before we know the difference in the different species, how they're affected. So, but we cannot wait till we know all the details. We cannot wait till we know how producers are being compensated for all the measures that are important. We have to recognize that a standstill, that animals have to stay where they are until we know what we're dealing with, is, for example, for foot and mouth, essential in making sure that the disease doesn't spread like a wildfire at the beginning, and we really don't know how to stop it when it's spread like that. So working through the exercises, through simulations, learning from people that have lived it will definitely help to be prepared and for people to recognize that it goes beyond, you know, the health of your individual animals.
And on a final note, I wonder, Dr. Orsel, if you could perhaps leave us with a few good news stories. What were some of the successes that came out of some of these disease incidents that you've experienced?
Well, I might have emphasized, I don't know if it came through, is the importance of working together. And I think that was, you know, in my lived experience in 2001, for sure, I saw people working together because we recognized that we had to save our industries. We had to save our market access. And it's not about, you know, the auctions, about the transporters, about the producers. You're all in it together. And I've seen people understanding that and wanting to work together. I think what also was important, and that was definitely a lesson learned for me, is that, and it's not just the agricultural industry. There's a lot of people affected by anything that happens in the agricultural industry. So working together and see that everyone is affected, and I saw that happening, that was also the good news story. If you work together, you can get a lot of things done. And so I'm very hopeful that the Canadian industry is willing to work together as well across provinces, across industries, across commodities to just deal with it if we have to.
Yes, I'm sure a lot of efficiency can be achieved if everybody can step up to the plate at the same time to work towards improving an emergency situation.
I agree.
Thanks very much, Dr. Orsel, for sharing your experiences with us today. Hopefully, Canadian cattle producers and some veterinarians will benefit from hearing some of your real-life tales here of the possible impacts of these diseases like foot and mouth disease. For more information on foreign animal diseases and cattle health, we'll share some links and some information on the Western Canadian Animal Health Network's Beef and Dairy Network pages.